Hello and welcome to Tonspur N, the podcast on sustainable development, corporate social responsibility and social entrepreneurship. My name is Roman Mesicek, and this 11th season of the podcast is once again dedicated to the topic of sustainability management in practice. This time we will focus on the challenges and opportunities for young people who want to explore this field for themselves. These five episodes are a collaboration between IMC University of Applied Sciences Krems and Tonspur N. Starting in the next winter term of 2024, the university will offer a bachelor's program in business administration called Global Sustainability and Circular Business. To mark this occasion, we have invited people who were involved in the development of the program to join us. In today's episode, our guest is Anne-Marie Kennedy, Associate Professor at the University of Canterbury in New Zealand. She works at the Department of Management, Marketing and Tourism in the UC Business School. Her research interests include macro marketing, social marketing, ethics and sustainability. So welcome, Anne-Marie, to our podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you on board. We are talking to New Zealand now. That's a new experience for me too. We have exactly 12 hours time difference. And for a start, as always in this series, tell us a bit about yourself, about your work at the university, about your interests, and how that relates to sustainability.
Okay. I should probably start the way that we do in New Zealand, which is we tell a little bit about where we've come from, and I just do this quickly, but I'm from born in Wellington in New Zealand, where we have our parliament. I've lived in Auckland, in Northland, which is the very far tip of New Zealand, and now I live in a little ski, you would call it a ski village, Methven, which is by Christchurch, which is where I work, and I have two young children, a husband, a dog, and a cat. So, you know, the environment is quite important to me because I love the snow, and we know through all the different things that are happening with the weather patterns that things like being able to go skiing and snowboarding, it is harder these days, and we have different seasons and patterns. So the environment is really important to me in terms of spending all my time, you know, a lot of my time outside and enjoying the environment. So that's kind of where I come from.
And so, sorry to interrupt you, you have the same discussions that we have around skiing. That's something I'm wondering now.
We do. And, you know, the season changing, and it comes later or it comes earlier, and then you have unseasonal snow and all the effects on, you know, the tourism in the areas where you have ski fields. I used to be a snowboard instructor. And I traveled around the world doing that. And my husband is a ski instructor. So we see this every day, and we see the impact on people and the employees of the mountains and the towns around them, right, that these things have. So it's a really, you know, it's dear to many people's hearts, the impacts of different aspects of sustainability.
So is this also, because you are in the Department of Tourism as well, is this also one of your research topics, or are you going into a different direction?
So I don't look at this in terms of tourism, although actually I am just finishing up a revision on an article that's an ethnography of snowboard instructors and ski instructors. And so what that was looking at in terms of sustainability is, well, basically, it started off with me becoming a snowboard instructor, which was my dream. It's funny. I got a PhD, and then I was like, but my dream is to become a snowboard instructor. So I went out there, and I did my course, and I traveled around the world doing that. And what I noticed was that, in essence, people who are doing these jobs, and myself being one of them, that we were quite, even though you think about travel in as terms of flying, okay, that was not a great carbon footprint. But in terms of possessions, we actually didn't have many possessions, because you travel around with one bag, as the airlines allow. And you move from, you know, season to season. So maybe New Zealand to Europe or Canada, North America or Japan. And you just have one bag. And so I found that inadvertently we were leading quite sustainable lifestyles. Mm-hmm. And that really, you know, sparked my interest in how is it that, you know, why is it that some people need to kind of amass things and live very consuming lifestyles, and then other people have some other thing that's kind of satisfying them, by which they don't need to have all of those things. So that is not a tourism-based article, but it does actually have implications for tourism, of course. Mm-hmm. But about consuming sustainably and what drives us to do that.
Mm-hmm. So consumption patterns in general are one of your research areas. What are your main results of your research, or how would you explain this for the people interested maybe in this course?
Yeah. So the main consumption patterns, what we found in the ethnography, and what we're kind of writing it up, so it's in revision for a journal right now. But what we found is that one might think of skiing and snowboarding as kind of a hedonistic experience, so that our senses are, you know, we feel free when we're skiing and we feel like they call it flow, but it's like you're so bound up in the experience that you're having, you know, going fast down the hill, that you think of nothing else, and it's so enjoyable. And the original assumption around that is because it's your senses, you know, it's the sport, it's excitement, and so it's that's hedonism. And what we found is that for instructors, actually, it's not about this pleasure aspect as much as it is about achievement, and that for them, because they're feeling like they have this, we call it, I mean, eudaimonia, it's a Greek, you know, from Greek tradition. It's about well-being, but because they're seeking something bigger, so they're seeking excellence in becoming instructors. So to be an instructor, you have to be really good at skiing, right? You have to be better than the person that you're teaching. So if you're teaching someone who is, you know, very, very good, you have to be better than them. So it is this constant striving to be the best at skiing and snowboarding. And so we found that when people have that, some sort of life purpose within current settings of being able to travel around the world and live in different places and visa allowances, then that's really driving them to not care about stuff. So it's more sustainable because they're not thinking, their key driver is achievement based on performance, as it were, not based on having a house and having a nice car and all those things. They're getting fulfillment from doing things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And have you looked at how that could be transferred maybe to other areas, or have you thought about that, obviously, or to maybe the students, or to in general society, where we see that these consumption patterns, and you know that better than myself, that we have this mass consumption, this fast cycles of products, so that we are driven, or in some way driven, to consume more. What would be the learnings for that, maybe? What to change?
Yeah, so, I mean, I think that, you know, especially young people today are actually driving towards that anyway, a lot of people. I mean, there's mm-hmm. a subset of people, right, that are driven by money and by having things. But I think the majority of young people that I have seen and met are actually looking towards things like being a zero-waste consumer. You know, there's this big trend on, you know, many social media feeds about people being zero waste and trying to live a zero waste lifestyle. And so you'll see these, you know, they come up with, here's my year's waste, and they hold up a little glass jar, and that's all the waste that they have mm-hmm. in the whole year. And it's amazing. And I've actually done a study with a master's student on zero waste consumers and what happens for them, and the barriers and challenges for that lifestyle. And for those people who are, people not traveling around the world, I guess, doing a job, you know, because the ethnography work on snowboard instructors, I mean, that applies to many jobs, but it's more traveling jobs, right? So if you're doing something like DJing around the world, you think of many sports people who actually, you know, before they get professional sports people, I should say, that we have in New Zealand, like rodeo, or you have musicians and dancers and all of those wonderful artistic and creative jobs and professions, you know, they may live that kind of lifestyle as they move around. But for many of us, like me included now, I just live at home and drive to work, unfortunately, because I have no public transport. welcome to New Zealand. And so for me, it actually comes about in understanding things like for zero waste. I mean, what's the motivator for zero waste? And the motivator has to be something more, right? And that's what we can learn from the people who are traveling around the world. You know, they're motivated by something more. It's actually not about necessarily even having environmental motives, although that helps, right? We do see people that think, I want to save the world, and so I'm going to be doing this thing. But also for us, it's about control. So we all like to control our own lives. We all like to think we have control over our lives.
Yeah.
When we have uncertainty in the economy and in the climate, we feel it's very bad for us, right? We all feel bad when that is our psychological state is negative, when we have uncertainty in our lives. And so in terms of sustainability and things like zero waste or just any sustainable consumption, it is actually introducing control to you as a consumer. You can take back control because you can control who you purchase from. You can control who you support, what companies you support, and you can control your own consumption behaviors. Do I purchase a product that is all wrapped in plastic? Do I purchase individual servings of things which have more packaging instead of one large serving and then divide it out into my own containers at home? Austria and Europe, you have beautiful public transport, right? So do I take that public transport or do I use, a car?
A car.
Mm-hmm. So these are choices that we have and we can take control of that. And I think that's what I've found through this research is that actually, it's about sustainable values, but it's also about taking control of our lives. And I think that's more motivating than pure sustainable values.
Mm-hmm. Well, before looking at the other side, maybe what you see the companies, maybe how the companies are reacting on that, I have actually a bit of a historical question because this kind of movement or there was some kind of movement some time ago, at least 10 years or so, where we already saw that, well, put your money where your heart is or something like that, or where your ethics are. And this idea of consumer movements for sustainability is not something that is now new in a way, but do you see that it has gathered a bigger, group, or are we... Because I'm always wondering if this really will put enough pressure or will give enough drive to the transformation to sustainability within the companies and within their product offerings. Mm-hmm. Because we talk about that for such a long time already.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I think what's happened in the movement is originally we were all kind of full of hope, right? We were like, mm-hmm. If we put our money behind these companies, they'll do so well. And unfortunately, capitalism won out, right? And so what we saw is that retailers and companies in general, we shouldn't have been surprised at this, but we were, that they were driven by profit. So they're not driven, some are, you have B Corps and other organizations, but the major ones are driven by profit and by growth. And so what happened is that they were not being authentic, right? So they're inauthentically being sustainable. And so what that looks like, I won't name companies on an international podcast, but for what that looks like is that the company might have one line of sustainable products. So if you look at fast fashion, which is another area of my passion for me, you know, we all are aware of the fast fashion companies, clothing companies, I won't name them. But what we're seeing, because they had, you know, this consumer backlash, is that they went, okay, well, we'll just have a particular line of clothing that's this, you know, sustainably conscious line. We're not going to have all of the clothing sustainably conscious. We're going to do one line. And what that tells us as consumers is that they're being inauthentic, right? Because if they were authentic, all of their products would be sustainable. And so what we're seeing actually is this consumer backlash towards this inauthenticity. And we also hear the words woke washing, right? Is the term that we're, you know, everyone's using now. That the company is not making sustainable decisions. They're making decisions that give them profit, that include sustainability as a profit maximizing strategy. Mm-hmm. And what I'm delighted to see is that people younger than me are seeing right through this. They are like, no way, we do not believe you as a company. We see you and we see that you are not doing this authentically. And so I think the thing that we can do as consumers to drive this change, I think this is what you were kind of getting at with your question before, is that we were told that consuming more was going to help things be more sustainable, right? Literally through your money, spend more money with these companies so that they will be more sustainable. I would say to you that actually sustainability is not about purchasing more things. Yeah, it would be about purchasing less things. And so I'm not saying don't go out and get your new top, because I'm with you. I like getting my new top. I like getting my jeans and all those things. But what I'm saying is that purchase less from those companies who are inauthentic, and purchase less in general. So we see the slow fashion movement, which is really cool. And if, you know, anyone listening has not looked this up, please look it up. It's really, it's rad. So go look it up. And there are companies and clothing companies that are part of the slow fashion movement. And you know what? It's more expensive to buy their products because they pay their workers appropriately. The material might be organically grown. It's sustainably produced, and it lasts longer. So what I would say to you is go to these companies who are authentically sustainable, and you know what? Buy one pair of trousers that might last you a year instead of purchasing four pairs of trousers a year from a fast fashion, you know, company. Yeah.
So hopefully more than a year for a trouser.
Yes, well, we hope so. But you know what I mean? Like, I think you have to be realistic with fashion trends.
I think this, especially this has fast fashion and the fashion industry has been discussed so many times already, and many would argue, or I have heard for quite some time as I'm teaching CSR, corporate social responsibility, well, better that they do at least one green line than if they do nothing. But as you totally correctly say, I think we have to look at the whole picture. And coming back to the whole picture, because maybe now thinking about people maybe doing this bachelor global sustainability and circular business and now wanting to start to work in a company, not consuming something, but starting to work in a company and maybe also looking for the authenticity. What would you say to those, how to choose maybe the company to work for, or what to look for in a company when they really want to engage in sustainability in a company in an authentic way or so?
Yeah, So I teach my students this as well in one of my courses at Canterbury. So how do we know if we're working for a company? I don't want to say the good guys and the bad guys. It's not really like that. But, you know, how do you are authentically sustainable and you want to work for someone else who's authentically sustainable. And I would say to you that it comes around when you see their decision making and you see their criteria. So if we have criteria that is based on profit first, and so they say, oh, well, we could pay workers more, but if we do, it's going to increase prices. It's going to it's going to increase prices. Oh, and that will take away our profit margin. So we're not going to do that. We'll just move factories somewhere else, right? They're not thinking about sustainability first. So if it is a company that puts people and the planet decisions before making more profit, that's how you know. So when you see, normally you see the sustainability circles and we say there's these three circles, the triple bottom line, people, profit, and the planet, and they're joined in the center. That join in the center is sustainability. I would say to you that actually what we should see is concentric circles instead, where we have, you know, people and the planet, or actually maybe depends on how you do it, but where the, say if you're thinking about the biggest circle being the most impact, so you would have, say, depending on your culture, the planet or people as the biggest circle, and then planet or the people as the second circle, and then just this tiny circle in the middle about profit. We need to make profit. We need to keep companies going, right? We need to keep jobs. We need to run the economy. Let's be realistic. But we don't have to make it in terms of excessive profit at the cost of our future world.
And how do you see, how do you look at the economy, the worldwide economy or the New Zealand economy with regard to that? Do you see, look hopefully in the future that companies are on the way to this transitioning, maybe a bit away from the profits and then nothing more? Yeah. Or how do you see that?
So I don't think it's, I mean, it's moving. I think what's happened with the economies is that obviously, you know, governments have to become involved. That's what's happened because, so now that we call it like a bit of a carrot and a stick. And as there's some things, you know, the stick, governments are saying, well, you have to buy carbon credits and those kinds of things. So they're forcing companies to do some changes. And also just companies are also doing some changes as well, which is great. But I think just realistically, we're in a capitalist society where we look for growth, constant growth, right? And that's the issue. We're looking at growth every year. Even the economy, right, of each country is trying for growth in their GDP. That is their measure of health, growth. and because of this growth as being the measure of health, that's really what's setting us back. And so it's this whole culture and paradigm change that we might be able to drive, as well as our young people who are coming through these degrees or our new graduates coming through these degrees. You know, what we want to see from you is that you're not only set on this growth mindset, right? We could actually have it as even. You don't necessarily, you can still make profit, keep employees if you have the same amount of profit each year, yet nobody thinks about that. It doesn't have to be about giving more money to more shareholders and da-da-da-da-da. It could actually be equalizing things. And that's a shift of mindset that we hope, you know, new graduates might have when they see this bigger systemic picture of what happens around the world. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Anne-Marie. I would really like to close with that because I really find that encouraging. Shift of mindset is something to go for when teaching and when talking about these topics with students. Thank you very much for these interesting insights.
Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me.
That's all for this episode of Tonspur N.
The podcast was founded in 2015 by Anne-Marie Harand and me. You can find all previous episodes to listen to on our website www.tonspur/n.eu. You can subscribe to the podcast with Apple Podcasts, for example. You can listen to it with Spotify, for example. Feedback, questions or suggestions can be sent by email to podcast@tonspur/n.eu. This series on sustainability management in practice is a cooperation between Tonspur N and the IMC University of Applied Sciences, Krems. Until next time, have a good time and all the best.